me together forever and ever. We don't have to worry about a thing, about a thing. No.
You're listening to The Doherty Report with Elizabeth Doherty. Once again, here's Elizabeth.
Welcome back to The Doherty Report. I'm Elizabeth Doherty. Boy, do I have something for you. We've talked about Mandalay Bay. We've talked about it at length. And now we have a very special guest, Jim Fetzer. He's a PhD. Welcome to the program, sir.
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth. It's a delight to be back.
Well, we always appreciate what you have to say. And last week, we were talking about Mandalay Bay in the context of people speculating that there were helicopters there. We did not know that you had been really researching this, although we figured you may have been. So what have you found out? What can you tell us?
What I can tell you is the whole thing was a movie. They used a pre-recorded soundtrack. They played over the PA system. It was much too high quality to have been real. They had the sound of machine guns, even bullets hitting hard surfaces. But when they initially began to play it over the PA system, it was too faint. So the crisis actors who had seated the audience, as many as 500 in number, weren't able to react. They had coordinated visual effects. They had lights flashing on the fourth floor of the Mandalay to simulate a machine gun. They had three light bursts higher up to simulate American military weapons, which fire in three-shot bursts. And we even turned out to have a video of a man in a crowd turning to fire on the crowd, where you can see the light from his muzzle blast, but there's no impact of any bullets because they weren't real. The crowd couldn't hear the initial sound of the machine gun, so they had to turn up the volume on the PA system. The whole thing was totally fake. Yeah, the chief executive officer of Mandalay Bay selling off 80% of his stock in advance so he could buy it on the cheap when the stock dropped. You had George Soros placing a $41 million short on the Mandalay Bay to make a bundle when the stock dropped. We have crowds on demand, an L.A. outfit recruiting crisis actors 15 days in advance. We have the crime map, the police map for the vicinity, and it from 8 p.m. on the first to 8 p.m. on the second, and it shows a lot of routine automobile recovery, assault and battery. There are about a dozen different reports, but none of them involve any gunshot victims, any shooting event. We have a Facebook friend of mine who contacted the three closest hospitals about gunshot admissions, and they all three admitted they had had no gunshot admittees. One even said, I think you're crying about the drill. That was not real. No one was actually shot. She gave the phone numbers I call and confirmed exactly what they told her. It was unbelievable.
Why didn't the media pick up on any of that?
Well, the media, I'm sorry to say, is deeply involved, completely corrupt. We have all kinds of coverage. Take, for example, the phony Russian hacking. There was no Russian hacking. Kim.com just yesterday reaffirmed about the downloading was to a memory stick at a rate of speed that was impossible for distant hacking. Bill Binney, who's maybe our very best guy in this area of computer technology, just met with Mike Pompeo, the head of the CIA, to explain to him that the whole thing was a charade, that there was no hacking. We actually know the idea of Russian hacking was made up by John Podesta and Robbie Mook within 24 hours of Hillary's concession speech, as the two reporters who followed the campaign published in their book Shattered in early 2017, but the media isn't reporting it. This was to obfuscate the fact that they'd run a really incompetent campaign to distract attention from the contents of the WikiLeaks revelation, which led directly to Pizzagate, where John Podesta himself is pedophile-in-chief, and to create confusion about entanglements with Russia, where Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, sold off 20% of U.S. uranium reserves to Russia through a Canadian company, Uranium One, for $145 million donation to the Clinton Foundation, which required the approval of then-President Barack Obama. If Julius and Ethel Rosenberg received the electric chair for sharing atomic secrets with the then Soviet Union, Elizabeth. What do Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama deserve for selling off 20% of U.S. uranium reserves to Russia?
Well, that's a great question. And also, why is no one looking at the money laundering that took place here and everything else, and the fact that, you know, the Canadian company was just a go-around, you know, because technically we're not supposed to sell to countries like Russia, that type of thing. So,
of course, but the whole thing was being spearheaded by a corrupt core of Hillary partisans and Obama holdovers in the FBI and the Department of Justice. In fact, at the time this was going on, they were even involved in creating the fake dossier by this Christopher Steele guy, who was leaking its contents before it even got into the hands of the authorities, to the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, Yahoo News, Mother Jones. I mean, the whole thing was corrupt from the beginning. You had these extreme partisans like James Comey and Andrew McCabe, Peter Strozak, Lisa Page, his girlfriend. They were all working and off against Donald Trump for Hillary Clinton, giving her clean bill of health for obvious violations of national security protocols. It is disgusting, and it's all coming out now, and it's to distract attention that we had the event in Florida, which is another fake shooting, I'm sorry to say, but the evidence is simply overwhelming.
Okay, let's go there.
Well, let's begin with one of the early tells was we turned out to have an Instagram where the alleged shooter is wearing a Make America Great Again cap. I mean, what could be a more obvious attempt to lampoon Trump?
Right.
This kid wears, he's supposed to have shot up 17 kids in a Broward County high school. Then the location, Elizabeth. It's only about 35 miles from Mar-a-Lago. That's rather stunning. And guess what? It's in the district of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. If that doesn't speak volumes about what's going on here, it ought to be terribly telling. The Broward County School District Superintendent turns out to have come from Chicago, where he worked with Rahm Emanuel, who, of course, was Barack Obama was reported to have had a torrid gay affair in Chicago before Obama became president of the United States. Then we have this very suspicious Broward County Sheriff, Scott Israel, the county's first Jewish sheriff. He campaigned on being Jewish. He cited the Talmud, which ought to have been an alarming, except that Broward County is very heavily populated with Jews. Florida is the third largest Jewish population in the country after New York and California. This whole thing appears to have been a Broward County Zionist DNC op to show the Sandy Hook people how to do it right. And get this, Elizabeth, here's another major tell. The name of the school, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, was named after an American journalist, writer, feminist, and environmentalist known for her staunch defense of the Everglades against efforts to drain it. In other words, they picked the school to send a message to Trump to not drain the swamp. I mean, it's embarrassingly bad.
Wow. Okay, a few questions. As far as the shooting in Florida goes, normally the shooter is dead. So this guy, he still survives, presumably, if that's the guy. And, I mean, what does he believe in his mind that he did this? I mean, what is the thinking here?
He's just playing a role here, Elizabeth. He came in by Uber cab. He had his weapon, it appears, in a case. He left it behind. He was walking out with another student who said she was having a conversation with him when she heard shots fired from a different area.
Right.
That led her to conclude there were at least two shooters. But I'll tell you, a whole lot of anomalies. I listened to the CNN played a soundtrack in a classroom, and you could hear the shooter. The shooting, you could hear the mechanism of the weapon, and it was much too loud and distinct to have been real. It had to be another fabricated soundtrack like they did in Las Vegas. Here are some key features about the situation. Students who survived were told the police would do a fake Code Red with fake guns. Laura Loomer, who's done a lot of good reporting from Las Vegas, reported that Will Gilroy, a 15-year-old student, said they were told there'd be an active shooter drill at the school this week, which is why students thought they were participating in a drill when they were being evacuated. We have video footage of an NSC vehicle leaving the campus. There was no reason not to have been there. Other students said there were Army personnel on the campus who told the kids not to look around at the bodies they moved and hid under mats, no doubt because they were fake. We have another student reporting that the Secret Service was present, changed school security policy several weeks before the shooting. Well, that's a major tell. Intel Hub even did a poll of its readers. Why would the Secret Service have changed security protocols at the Stoneman Douglas High School unannounced to teachers and other staff just weeks before the shooting? 61% said because they were in on it. 32% they had foreknowledge. 7% it was just a coincidence. Well, here's another coincidence, Elizabeth. Security cameras on the freshman building entrance were removed in advance of the false flag.
Wow. So these kids that showed up on TV over the weekend saying they want to have these marches across the country, do they believe people died? Because, I mean, from my understanding, there were actual kids that perished in this.
Well, that's what we're told. But look, we were given photographs and biosketches of 20 kids at Sandy Hook and 6 adults. But in fact, the school had been closed by 2008. There were no students
there.
That's
true, yes.
They didn't allow the parents to view the bodies, claiming that that would have been too traumatic, so they identified them using photographs. But, Elizabeth, they only existed as photographs. They were made up out of photos of older kids when they were younger. We've been able to prove it. Wolfgang Halbig has recently produced a photograph of 8 of the girls from Sandy Hook who are alive and well, doing just fine, thank you, with their photographs of having been killed there. We have 58 that are supposed to have died in Las Vegas. Well, I have an expert, Mona Alexis Presley, who's been tracking them down, and those obituaries, even though you got photographs and bio sketches, were based on people who died in different states or on different dates or for different causes of death. It turns out this young man who has been so prominent on the media is the son of an FBI agent who is anti-Trump, and he was coached on his lines. In fact, there's one interview I watched where he's got to do multiple takes to get his lines right. He's so embarrassed that he can't get it right. The whole thing was staged, phony, and fake.
Well, here's a question I have. On that Intel Hub site, Michael completely freaked me out last week because he showed me pictures of the supposed shooter in Las Vegas at a casino in Atlantic City. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, there were, Professor, there was a picture that was taken supposedly about a week, I guess it was October 8th, of Stephen Paddock at the table with his girlfriend right next to him, you know, gambling at some sort of event, I don't know if it was a charity.
Well, they held up a flyer with the date on it.
They held up a flyer, and you can tell that was Stephen Paddock.
Well, that's actually consistent with the latest. Intel Hub's actually been doing really well. They committed a blunder a while back by believing there was a mini massacre at Hooters, because there were 17 ambulances pulled up in front of Hooters. But if they looked at their own internal footage, it was just loaded with bored crisis actors, each of whom had their own sheet waiting their turn to be carried out on a stretcher as another victim. We have a photograph of 3 bodies being transferred from a funeral home hearse into an ambulance to be presented as more bodies from the Las Vegas shooting massacre. But Intel Hub has been reporting very astutely that the body we see in the suite in Mandalay Bay with the blood coming out the back of the head is not Stephen Paddock. Paddock had earlobes that connected smoothly to his head, but the body there has curled earlobes, therefore not Paddock. Turns out the body subjected to the autopsy was 73 inches in length or height. That's 6'1". But we have an Alaska hunting and fishing license for Paddock that shows he was 6'4". The Clark County coroner shut down just at the time people were wanting to see death certificates and autopsy reports because he didn't have any. because of a freedom of information request coming from Las Vegas publication. The judge has directed their release. The coroner balked, and then he released 58 autopsy reports with the names redacted and no ballistic data, which makes it impossible to tell who was who, and with no ballistic data, whether they were shot or their cause of... I mean, this is just absurd. In fact, the judge is so incensed, he's now directed that all of the documents from October 1st have to be released. The whole thing is going to fall apart, but it was an elaborate scam. And in the case of Florida, it appears we have the FBI colluding with the DNC, with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, with this corrupt guy who's the head of the school board, with the sheriff. Here's another interesting story. Haaretz, this is a famous newspaper in Israel, reported Florida shooter Nicholas Cruz trained with white supremacists, at least four Jews among those killed. Now, frankly, I followed a lot of these shootings, and I've never heard of the ethnicity or religion of the targets being identified, in this case, four Jews. Turns out that the story was a fabrication. Law enforcement has concluded there was no white nationalist ties to Florida. On the other hand, this sheriff is a very peculiar guy. As I mentioned, he campaigned on being a Jew. He cites the Talmud. Those familiar with the Talmud understand it's a document of Jewish racial superiority, declaring that Jews are superior to all the other races, which only exist to serve the Jews. This guy appears to be completely corrupt. We have from the Saker, a news brief, Sheriff Scott Israel, confirmed liar and manipulator. This guy's got a history. And when it comes to dead people, we have a replication of an event at Sandy Hook where James Mattioli, one of the deceased, attended his own funeral. We have photographs of this coach who's supposed to have heroically given his life to defend the students attending one of the funerals. Mona has begun doing research on the alleged victims of the Parkland shooting and found in the case of this coach that although he claims to have played for the Philadelphia Eagles, if you go back and check their roster, no one of his name ever played for the Eagles. And here you have him turning up alive and well at one of the funerals. Turns out the Broward County Sheriff palled around with Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. We have photos of him with Hillary, photos of him with Joe Biden. Joe Biden was also involved in Sandy Hook. There's a Greater Boston radio show, which in November, shortly before the shooting, featured the mayor of Boston, who was boasting of being a buddy with Joe Biden. Andy Rooney's daughter hosts the show, and she was very curious when he explained that gun control was going to be a done deal by January of 2013. She asked how in the world could legislation pass so quickly for that to be the case. He wouldn't explain, but obviously this is because he was involved in the planning for Sandy Hook, which would occur about a month later, and where Obama on the 16th of January 2013 would sign no less than 23 executive orders to curtail our access to weapons under the Second Amendment. We have another student speaking out here in Florida who is on the Good Morning Show that Matt Lauer was bounced from. So you have this Samantha Guthrie interviewing her, and she is saying how one of her friends was shot and killed right beside her, but she's not showing any bona fide grief. In fact, her acting is very poor. She claims she herself was wounded. But it's ridiculous. She's not showing any signs of any wounds. That's another phenomenon we had from Las Vegas, where Paul Craig Roberts, our nation's leading public intellectual, received reports from a military surgeon with extensive background with the wounds inflicted by military weapons, who'd reviewed the interviews of the patients in the hospital and forced to conclude none of them had been shot. They were all just acting. It was followed up by an American trauma surgeon who wrote to Paul Craig Roberts as well, observing they weren't even connected to the diagnostic equipment for their blood pressure or IV drops. A couple of months ago, I lost my balance and went down to get checked out. Within 5 minutes, I was connected to the blood pressure monitor. They kept me on it until I got a clean bill of health. This all was completely phony. This young woman... claims, I mean, of all absurdities, that she was in Holocaust class when the guns shooting first went off. that they were had a locked in a classroom where the door was locked, but that he fired through the glass, and that she actually picked up a book. She said it was a small book, but it deflected one of the bullets. I mean, this is absurd beyond belief. I'm a former Marine Corps officer. I used to supervise recruit training, 15 DIs, 300 recruits under my command. This is just a fantasy story. She's not showing any bona fide grief, any real effects of any injury in her story of deflecting a bullet with a tiny book is a complete fantasy.
Well, going back to Sandy Hook for a moment, it was interesting when we had Wolfgang Halbig on the program the first time. I think, did we have him back, Michael, or did he have to cancel?
I think we had him on and then we brought him back when the pictures appeared on your computer.
Yeah, I had something like 110 pictures mysteriously appear on my laptop, and it showed the storage boxes and everything else that was inside that school.
That storage facility.
Wasn't being used as a school. And
no, that's right. Go ahead.
But the funny thing was, all these pictures just suddenly appeared on Elizabeth's desktop.
And I called the sheriff's department in Orange County here in Orlando. And I said, look, I've got all these pictures of Sandy Hook that showed up on my laptop. She goes, well, I don't know what to tell you about that. And, I mean, they acted like I was nuts or something. But I still have them.
Well, good. I'm sure they're all completely authentic. Wolfgang has been very diligent in obtaining photographs about the state and condition of the school. In fact, if you just look down on an aerial photograph of the parking lot from the 14 December 2012, you can tell the whole thing was phony because there are none of the familiar blue and white parking spaces for handicapped, none of the blue and white signage. I verified the law in Connecticut and the federal law at the time. And that school could not have been legally operating if it wasn't handicap accessible. We have doorways and exits such as a wooden stairway where there's a steel pipe sticking out that it could pop the eye out of a little kid if it ran into it. This was a kindergarten through fourth grade school, after all, a wooden stairway that no wheelchair could navigate. That means the school could not have been legally operating. It was a 28 degree Fahrenheit ground temperature day, but there's no heat or steam rising from the building. No doubt because the boilers were decrepit and non-functional from having been out of use since 2008.
And there was no blood.
Well, of course. Of course no blood. They wouldn't allow anyone into the building because there weren't any bodies there. In fact, when they tore down the building, they required the construction workers involved in its demolition to take lifetime gag orders that they couldn't talk about what they saw or didn't see, which have included no blood on the floor, no pockmarks in the wall. We even have a photograph of a crime scene team there early. This turns out to have been taken the night before, but the crime scene vehicle is already on the scene. If you look just above the roof, you can see a string of four windows in classroom 10 that are undamaged. That's significant because after the event, they'd be shot out. In particular, the second of the four windows would be completely shot out. So this is before the shooting. The flag is at full mast. You come down, and just to the right there, leaning against the wall, is a familiar figure with his arms crossed, awaiting the arrival of his portable mortuary tent. That's Wayne Carver. They have crime scene tape up for a crime that is yet to be committed. We have other photographs, and by the way, you can find all these in the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which Amazon banned less than a month after I put it for sale, so I release it for free as a PDF. Just put in the title, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, and you can download your own copy for free. And you'll also find photographs of the windows of Classroom 10 before and after the shooting so you can compare it for yourself. We have a photograph of the perps drilling holes in the window frame to simulate bullets that were not fired. And another photo showing pink rods extending from the holes are exactly 90 degrees to the window frame and parallel with one another. I had 15 DIs and 300 recruits under my command going through marksmanship training and the rest of it. This is a complete fantasy. This is totally fabricated. We have the proof. It's ironclad. We even have the FEMA manual for the two-day event.
All right, Professor, one of the things, and we've talked to Wolf, obviously, as well, he mentioned the fact that at Sandy Hook, there were no helicopters. You would expect that there would be medical evacuation helicopters dropping in, picking up kids and taking off. We also did not see that at the shooting in Broward County.
They did have tents.
They had the tents, but they did not have, you know, you would expect there to be evacuation helicopters, medevacking kids out of there. Nothing.
Well, there are many anomalies. When you distinguish between the 13th in Newtown, which was the day of the rehearsal, it explains why they had porta potties already in place, why there was pizza and bottled water at the firehouse, why there were so many there with name tags on lanyards, why there was a sign, a portable sign, saying everyone must check in, why there were parents bringing children to the scene. No parent would bring their child to the scene of a child shooting massacre, but this was the rehearsal, and they were treating it as a festive occasion. It says right in the manual, everyone must check in. Indeed, under oath, Patricia LaLorda, who's the first selectman of Newtown, that's equivalent to being the mayor, acknowledged under oath that sign had been placed there by the Department of Homeland Security, which is very peculiar since they ought to have had nothing to do with it. It was as the story we've been told. The following day, there was no surge of EMTs into the building. Even the firehouse chief, and the firehouse is only about a third of the mile up Dickinson Drive, and his daughter, who are both EMT qualified, rushed down and were denied access. As I mentioned, they didn't let the parents in because there were no bodies there. There was not only no surge of EMTs into the building, no string of ambulances to rush the little bodies off to hospitals where they could be determined to be dead or alive. As you observed, as Wolfgang noted, they didn't even bring in the medevac helicopter. They do that even for drills. So those people sat there waiting for the phone to ring, and it never happened. We had very similar events in Boston, where we had the police on bullhorns calling out, "This is a drill! This is a drill!" We had the Boston Globe tweeting that a demonstration bomb will be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities, and a second tweet that one will be set off in a minute in front of the library, and a minute later in front of the Boston Public Library, one of these puff bombs goes off. I was an artillery officer in the Marine Corps. I can assure you these weren't powerful enough to have killed anybody, unless perhaps you were actually sitting on top of it. When you peer through the smoke, yes, there are bodies with missing arms and legs lying on the ground, but there is no blood. As Lorraine Day, who is in charge of trauma surgery for San Francisco General Hospital for 25 years, has observed, it's a physiological impossibility to have arms and legs blown off by explosives and there to be no blood. The blood only shows up later, and it came out of tubes. It was Hollywood blood. It was fake blood. It never changed color. It was much too bright to be real. I was astonished when a Hollywood producer-director by the name of Nathan Folks, who identified one of the key players, this tall guy in a cowboy hat, his name is Carlos Arredondo, as an actor he cast in one of his own films, told me they'd used a smoke machine. We peered through the footage, and we found a studio-quality smoke machine. I was so stunned. I put it on the back cover of our book, and nobody died in Boston either, where you can see it for yourself at moonrockbooks.com.
Wow. So what about this Jesus Campos guy? The guy at Mandalay Bay.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
You know, when you start off by saying, I know you've got a story to tell. Who was Jesus Campos?
Well, there's a mini scandal here within the scandal, which is this. Jesus Campos was supposed to be the security guard who, according to the initial account, knocked on the door of the Paddock Suite on the 32nd floor after he'd been committing this massacre, and Paddock shot him and then committed suicide. That's the official story. Now, as I've already explained, it's not even the body of Stephen Paddock and so forth. And he may very well be in Atlantic City playing poker, as you have reported.
Right.
But the fact is that Jesus Campos, to be a security guard in Las Vegas, you have to be registered in Nevada, but his name doesn't appear on any list of those registered as security guards. We have another security guard who actually works on the 32nd floor that he never even heard of Jesus Campos. Well, Jesus Campos was standing by to do 5 national interviews, including with Hannity, when he simply disappeared. And the question became, well, what happened in the world to Jesus Campos? He winds up on the Ellen DeGeneres show. And although it's an emotional, they never panned to the audience, which tells me there was no audience present. Ellen seems rather nervous. And when you look at the guy, He's 30 to 50 pounds heavier than Jesus Campos, and he's not wearing the prescription glasses Jesus Campos wears. In other words, this is a body double. This isn't even Jesus Campos. Now, apparently he was unknowing that they changed the script. Now, officially, Jesus had knocked on the door before Paddock began the shooting, that Paddock had fired 200 rounds down the hallway of this luxury hotel as though no one would notice and hit Jesus.
Right.
But Jesus didn't have the change in the script, and he went ahead and reported to Ellen that he knocked on the door at the end of the shooting and was shot before Paddock committed suicide. In other words, the whole thing was a complete fraud. It turns out that the Jesus Campos actually looked strikingly like the husband at San Bernardino. We have the Craigslist ad for San Bernardino.
Wow.
With good pay, transportation, food, some speaking roles. There are lots of reasons we know that San Bernardino was also fake. I had a highly qualified paramedic do a show with me, an hour on Sandy Hook and an hour on San Bernardino. And he went through one violation of standard medical protocol after another. I published that on The Real Deal, staging attacks from Sandy Hook to San Bernardino. This is another fraudulent event. I mean, it's embarrassing how often the government is pulling these off, and we can thank Barack Obama for it, because in 2013, he vitiated a law from 1948, the Smith-Mundt Act, that precluded the use of the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation within the United States that were being used outside of the United States. And now we've had nothing but one string after another of these phony attacks. I just got back from Portland and Seattle, where I did a report, an update about five of these events: Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Charlottesville, and Las Vegas, plus some new information about JFK, because astonishingly we've discovered that the body and autopsy photographs published in a famous book, The Killing of a President by Robert Groden, aren't even of the body of JFK. Now,
wow.
I gave that presentation in Portland on Friday the 3rd and again in Seattle on the Sunday the 5th. And when the first version, there were several cameras there, went up, YouTube took it down immediately for violating YouTube's policy on violent or graphic content. But there isn't any violent or graphic content. The others were put up on BitChute, B-I-T-C-H-U-T-E, where YouTube can't take them down. But the one from Portland went up, again, false flags on five fronts with a warning. This video has been marked as not safe for work, that you're not supposed to watch it in a work environment, which is simply absurd. The other from Seattle, which is longer because it included some of the discussion afterwards, was also given a warning label. This video has been marked as not safe for life. It contains graphic content that most people will find upsetting, and it's recommended you view with extreme caution. That's all to distract people from learning how they perpetrate these false flag attacks so they can be wary and not be taken in again. It's embarrassing. But if you want a perfect proof of how they're abusing the media, just go to False Flags on Five Fronts. Just enter it into your browser. You'll find the two versions up on YouTube. They're very similar, but not exactly the same. You'll see the warning signs, and you can view them for yourself and understand the hypocrisy, the deceit, and deception of the social media, where the sheriff is now advocating preventive detention of anyone who posts something on a Facebook or other social media that might be thought to be disturbing. This is completely contrary to a free society. This is holding people responsible for crimes they have yet to commit. This whole thing in Broward County appears to be a DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Hillary Clinton, Zionist op, where they're trying to show those in Sandy Hook how it should have been done in the first place. In other words, they're trying to show how to do it better.
Well, let me ask you a question about the Boston Marathon bombing. When I was taking a class that was being given by counsel for the sheriff's department and some other folks, and during one of the breaks, one of the people mentioned that a person from the FBI had interviewed a Russian guy here in Orlando and interviewed him several times and ended up shooting him in his apartment in Orlando.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
He was a friend of the brothers. He was worried the FBI were coming there to kill him because he wasn't going to deviate in his testimony about the brothers who were framed. They were actually photoshopped into the images at the marathon. They weren't there at all. I learned that from their aunt, who is a formidable woman with a law degree from Moscow University. I asked how she could tell, and it's because Tamerlan, the older brother, was shown clean-shaven when he had a beard. I asked if she could prove it. She started sending me photograph of Tamerlan in bed with his cat. He had a beard. A link to a gymnasium where the brothers were working out. He had a beard. He was contacted by a friend the day of the marathon, relieved that they hadn't been anywhere near. They had dinner together. He had a beard. There's surveillance footage of Zocher inside, Tamerlan out. He had a beard. He was taken into custody in Watertown, stripped naked, and put into a police vehicle. He had a beard. The next thing we know, his body shows up with a huge gash in the side. He still has that beard. The official account claims that Zocher killed his brother by running over him, but that's preposterous. How could he do that once he was taken into police custody? In fact, we have a witness who reported watching the police drive over Tamerlan three times with a black SUV, which appears to be his own vehicle. So this all is outrageous. And get this, the alternative media cracked the case already the day of the marathon. By identifying the Kraft International personnel who were wearing khaki trousers, black jackets, black baseball caps with a skull insignia. The motto of Kraft is violence does solve problems. We have images, photographs of two of these guys, one wearing a black nylon backpack with a white square, going to the location where one of the bombs explodes, which was in a black nylon backpack with a white square, rushing away, no longer wearing the black nylon backpack with a white square. The FBI investigation of the bombing concluded that there were two bombs. They were both in black nylon backpacks. But it turns out when they photoshopped in the young men, they didn't give them the right backpack. Zocher has a silver backpack. Tamerlan has a dark backpack, but it's a different size and description than those that exploded. So that he was convicted without giving a proper trial. His attorney, although she pled him formally not guilty in her opening statement, said they did it, so there was never any obligation to prove they'd done it, which they had not. It would have been very easy to show that this was a fraud on the court. Well, Jack Remington Graham, who's a retired professor of law, was very struck by the fact that the backpacks don't match, and he actually submitted an amicus curiae friend of the court brief to the appeals court reviewing Zocher's conviction, where he's been sentenced to death, pointing out that since the backpacks don't match, there wasn't even probable cause for an arrest, much less an indictment or a conviction at trial. Citing this on behalf of three United States citizens, of whom I am the first named, the court, for the first time in American judicial history, has accepted the amicus curiae brief. It's now a part of the formal record. It will inevitably lead to a reversal and exposure of the whole thing as an elaborate sham.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking to Professor Jim Fetzer, and he does research on these types of matters that are concerning to us because you have been able to answer a lot of our questions. Now, here's another question. At Mandalay Bay, I saw video of people that did not appear to be upset. In fact, they were almost smiling when the shooting started, and I was a little concerned about that. You've got 500 people at this event. Not all of them could be actors. So,
No. Elizabeth, there were over 20,000 people at the event. They had 500 crisis actors seating the crowd.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, you're mistaking the scale of the whole operation. Yes, we have photographs of them smiling because they know it was all just a big joke. For them, it was a lark. They were being paid to do it. We have photographs of police crouching behind a police car, but there are two civilians beside them, one with his iPod, another on his cell phone. And they're totally unconcerned because they know the whole thing is staged. It was fake. It was a gimmick.
That's the we saw.
We have another video of a crisis director coming out during the alleged shooting. having a couple redo their scene to make it better. I mean, I can't tell you how much proof we have here. This whole thing was a sham. We've reviewed 33 videos from the shooting, and you hear lots of sounds of shots, but no one's being shot because there weren't any real bullets being fired. Many people don't even realize when the sheriff first came out, he said obviously more than one person was involved because the lobbies of three different hotels, casinos, the Bellagio, the Flamingo, and New York were also shot out. Americans aren't told that. So we have a fake simulated shooting from the fourth floor of the Mandalay, from the higher floor, this guy in the crowd who turns the fire. That's three different simulated shooters over and above the 32nd floor. And then we have the lobbies of these different hotels being shot out. This was all part of a very elaborate drill. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. And as I mentioned, we even have the crime map for the 1 square mile area surrounding the concert area, and there are no shooting events taking place at all from the 24 hours of 8 p.m. on October 1st to 8 p.m. on October 2nd. None.
Professor, I usually don't ask a question when I don't know the answer in advance, but I'm going to go out on a limb here. Have you ever been sued for the things that you allege?
No, I haven't.
So no one has ever said, oh, this is just nonsense, and filed a lawsuit against you, have they?
No, and look at it this way. My research is collaborative in relation to Sandy Hook, for example. That book, I brought together 13 experts, including 6 current or retired PhD college professors. I have a new book, my fourth book on JFK. I brought together 15 experts. My other books all have between a dozen and 15 experts. We do collaborative research. I know what I don't know, and I bring in experts in areas where I'm not myself an expert. I did this with my first 3 books on JFK, for example, mm-hmm. Assassination Science, 1998, Murder in Dealey Plaza, 2000, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, 2003. I brought together a world authority on the human brain who is also an expert on wound ballistics, a PhD in physics who is also an MD, board certified in radiation oncology, which is a treatment of cancer using X-ray therapy. So he was an expert on the interpretation of X-rays, a physician who was president trauma room number 1 when JFK's moribund body was brought in, and then 2 days later was responsible for the care and treatment of his alleged assassin. In our very first book, we published studies demonstrating the autopsy X-rays had been altered to conceal a fist-sized blowout at the back of the head. And another had been altered by adding a 6.5 metallic slice to the back of the X-ray to implicate this obscure World War II Italian carbine, this Mannlicher Carcano, which was actually known as a humanitarian rifle for never harming anyone on purpose, and that the brain shown in the diagrams and photographs in the National Archives is not even of the brain of JFK. I mean, we've just blew the whole case apart from the beginning, and I've gone on from there. And I continued my practice of bringing experts in for collaborative research because that reduces the probability of making mistakes to a very, very small number. And when indeed we get additional new information, we take it into account and, if necessary, make revisions. But in the case, for example, of Sandy Hook, the kind of additional information have included, for example, that report about the mayor of Boston appearing on the Greater Boston Radio Show and how Joe Biden was boasting that gun control would be a done deal by January of 2013. But we have another post that was put off recently by a fellow who visited a friend near Newtown in 2010. The school was 10 miles away. They traveled over there to pick up some school desks on the cheap for him to use for his own kids at home. This guy who was a contractor made many observations about the deplorable condition of the school, that it had mold and water marks well above the floor. There had been a hurricane. They had a severe flood in 2007, how the caretaker observed that the building was already condemned, that was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards. He noticed the parking lot was bereft of any signs of use, meaning the floods and the hurricane had washed away even any oil stains, which you'll find in any other parking lot that's actually in use. So this school had been abandoned. I lay this out, by the way, in the new review of the evidence about Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Charlottesville, and Las Vegas, that 5 false flags on 5 fronts when anyone can access now at BitChute.
One more question about Mandalay Bay, and that is, when you listen to the sound, we listen carefully to the sound because that's kind of what we do, and it sounded like there was a helicopter in the background. Did you find any evidence of that?
Well, I haven't myself, though I've heard those reports, but there wasn't any shooting of anyone, much less from a helicopter, okay? There's also a fanciful story about a Saudi prince having been there, and this was supposed to be some cover for an attempted assassination, but it's all nonsense. Nobody died in Las Vegas. It was a movie. And I didn't mention, by the way, but the Ellen DeGeneres Show is owned by MGM. I mean, ask yourself, what does MGM do? They make movies. They made a movie here to make a bundle for the chief executive officer for George Soros. There was even a plan to bring these body scanners into all the resorts and casinos where the Chertoff group was salivating in the background because they'd make hundreds of millions of dollars. This is headed by Michael Chertoff, who is our second head of Homeland Security, got the awful body scanners in all the airports, the safety of which has never been determined. I mean, one of the journalists who was advocating putting in these scanners in all the resorts and hotels said it only delays your admission to an entertainment venue by 30 seconds. But stop and think about it. How much damage to the human body can be done by 30 seconds of exposure to radiation? If you go to your dentist and they're going to do a dental x-ray, they cover you with a lead vest before they expose your teeth for milliseconds. I mean, the whole thing is completely absurd. They want to expand it to the schools and churches around the country and make hundreds of billions of dollars for no reason at all. In other words, they're inventing a problem for which there's a very expensive solution that is going to make them hundreds of billions of profits. I mean, it's disgusting what's going on here.
Wow.
Professor, what is the end game? What are they after by doing all these false flag operations? It can't just be the banning of guns.
Well, it's primarily the banning of guns. It's also making the public feel more dependent on the government. They're now introducing new mental health criteria. That's one of the issues that this sheriff down in Broward County is advocating, but there are very tangible benefits. Let's take Sandy Hook as an illustration. Sympathetic but gullible Americans contributed between $27 and $130 million in donations, which are divided between the 26 surviving families. That's over $1 million per family. The Newtown School Board received a $50 million grant to build a new school at Sandy Hook, where the old one had long since been abandoned. $50 million. I did research and found the average cost of a kindergarten through 7th through 4th grade school across the country is only $7 million. So they got 7 times $7 million. There were grants amounting to around $2 million that were divided among the police and other law enforcement officials, allegedly for pain and suffering, actually for just serving as extras on the scene of a carefully orchestrated event. I'm telling you, this whole thing is completely outrageous, and it's made a lot of money for the participants.
You know what we haven't asked you about is the Pulse shooting.
The Pulse was an embarrassment. The club had been closed for 3 years. They lost their permit 3 years in advance. There wasn't anybody there. There were only 11 parking spaces. They weren't even occupied. The legal occupancy of the Pulse was 150. If there had been 300 packed in there, as the official story claims, there would have been abandoned vehicles all over the place. They were not there. We had very comical crisis actors carrying bodies back and forth. I mean, it was so amateurish. You can find a, you know, video from the Pulse for the Crisis Actor Awards for 2017. It was that pathetic. I had a correspondent who resides in the area wrote me and told me it wasn't even a gay club. Yeah, I had the Orlando Emergency Medical Center announcing they're not going to bill for any services rendered. Well, that's because they didn't offer any services. When's the last time you heard of a hospital not charging for a Band-Aid? They didn't want to be prosecuted for fraud. Then they made up two absurd Dance Orlando dance videos, one with actors and actresses dressed as policemen and policewomen, another dressed as nurses and doctors, doing a little dance routine to make Orlando sound like an inviting place for families after this alleged massacre. It was totally fraudulent once again.
Okay,
You just left both of us because we live here in Orlando. At the time, we were living about a mile and a half from the Pulse nightclub, just north of downtown Orlando. You've left both of us speechless. That place had not been occupied.
They lost their permit 3 years before. They couldn't have been legally open. They weren't open. If you go back and look at the footage, you see there's just this dark building there. And there aren't any vehicles anywhere. Well, you know, there would have had to have been cars all over the place if this had all been legit and they were not there. I mean, that's one of many lines of proof. I have a book about...
You're right. There are no parking spaces down there because the club itself is right on South Orange Avenue. There's no parking spaces.
And we did an interview.
To accommodate that many people.
Do you remember the interview we did?
We talked with a young man. He might have been an actor.
But he kept changing his story. Remember?
Well, of course. That's the tell, you know, changing the story is one of the tells. So this thing in Florida, we got this young man who turns out to be the son of an FBI agent. Remember how Trump has been going after the FBI because of their collusion with Hillary and the whole Russiagate fabrication and the dossier and giving her a clean bill of health. So he's using his son as an instrument to attack Trump. And the son is so incompetent, he can't even get his lines straight. So we got an interview with him where he revises his lines and does new takes about five different times. That's very significant. If he'd been genuine and real, he wouldn't have had to do repeated takes. He's just trying to get his lines right according to the script he's been given.
Wow. Well, you know, I was remarking to Michael that used to be a pizza place years ago. I believe it was a place called Lorenzo's Pizza, but I'm not sure if that's the exact location.
Yeah, same address, 1911, South...
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it went back into business
and
records, and you're right.
And it was closed.
And the owner supposedly bought that property, turned it into a nightclub, a gay nightclub, in honor of her brother who had passed away.
Well, the whole thing was a fraud. I've got a book on that, too, from Orlando to Dallas and beyond, which also includes, by the way, a couple of hundred photographs of Hillary and her body doubles after her collapse at the 9/11 event. They were so worried that the public anxiety over her health was going to skyrocket that they sent out a body double from Chelsea's apartment. She was 15 or 20 pounds younger, 20 or 30 pounds lighter, much healthier, spry, limber, pleasant, most unlike Hillary Clinton. She resembles her so much I refer to as the Meg Ryan double from You Got Mail. Then a couple days later on the flight to Greensboro, they had a second body double with a two-slope forehead, the wrong nose, missing these two moles Hillary has above and below the right corner of her mouth. She looks so much like her, I refer to her as the Meryl Streep double. Believe it or not, they used Hillary doubles during the debates, both with Bernie Sanders and with Donald Trump. It's a much younger, more attractive version of Hillary. If you get the right angle, you can see there's this little metallic voice box in her throat that makes her voice sound indistinguishable from Hillary Clinton, but I guarantee it's not Hillary Clinton.
Wow. Okay.
All right, then. Do you remember which debate it was with Trump? Number one, two, or three?
Oh, sure. Well, it had to be the same. I mean, they were using their best body double for Hillary during the debate because she looked so much more attractive. There's a key feature that remains constant, your eye-teeth ratio. If you draw a parallel line between the pupils of your eyes and the bottom of your upper teeth, there's a constant ratio there. And one of the studies shows the actual ratio for Hillary is different than for the body double. I'll tell you, the American media hasn't shown any interest in this. We even had a story published in February 2017 by the New York Times about Hillary's in the house, showing photographs of four different appearances of Hillary at four different plays. And I looked at the photos, and none of them was Hillary Clinton. So I wrote to the reporter and said, this was a very interesting story, but none of those was Hillary Clinton. Did he not even notice she wasn't surrounded by her Secret Service detail? She didn't have her medical handler. This is also true of the body double who came out of Chelsea's apartment. No Secret Service, no medical handler. Chelsea didn't even come down to see her off. Those ought to have been major tells at the time. The whole thing has been an elaborate scam. And even the New York Times isn't willing to correct the record, even when they're given evidence, proof that in fact the persons who are showing up at these Broadway plays aren't even Hillary Clinton.
Speaking of Hillary, one of the lingering questions that we have is, Chelsea looks remarkably like Webb Hubble.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, Roger Stone blew that one out of the water in the Clinton's war on women. Yes, Webster Hubble is the father of Chelsea Clinton, not Bill. Bill has many times remarked he fires blanks. He's sterile. He can't have children.
Wow.
And in fact, you know, Hillary played on her relationship with Webster Hubble at the time of the Waco standoff because she was upset that all the media attention was focused on Waco when she was trying to promote her healthcare agenda. So she put pressure on Vince Foster to put pressure on Webster Hubble, who was then running the Department of Justice, to direct Janet Reno to launch an attack on the compound, which Janet Reno did not want to do. I have seen the aerial footage where you're looking down on automatic weapons being fired by the FBI into the compound. They use a tank to set the structure on fire. 84 innocent men, women, and children were burned to death at Waco because Hillary wasn't getting enough media time for her health care program.
Unbelievable. I do want to have you back, and I want to talk about Waco and Ruby Ridge. Unfortunately, we can't do it right now. But go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to say, I'd also like to invite you back on April 4th, the 50th anniversary of the shooting of MLK. I know you have some research there, too, don't you?
Yes, absolutely. Yes,
okay.
Indeed. And it's profoundly disturbing.
Let's just go ahead and book that now for April 4th, the 50th anniversary of the death of MLK. And, Professor, thank you so much for your time. You're absolutely amazing. We love having you on.
Unbelievable.
My great pleasure. Thank you so very much for featuring me today.
All right. Take care.
All right.